Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The nonprofit Central PA Friends of Jazz, located in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is searching for a new executive director who will, quote, provide leadership and overall direction of the organization in its mission to coordinate, educate, promote, and stimulate interest in jazz to enthusiasts, future enthusiasts, and organizations across this great region. For more information, email SheilaRoss@friendsofjazz.org. Jazz Backstory, a podcast series, is based on the holdings of the Phileas Jazz Archive at Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. Created by Phileas Jazz Archive Director Monk Rowe, the archive holds a collection of over 440 videotaped interviews with jazz musicians, arrangers, writers, and producers. For more information, hamilton.edu/jazzbackstory. Out now on Cymbal Press, Ruminations and Reflections, The Musical Journey of Dave Liebman and Richie Byrack, a new book from NEA jazz master, saxophonist Dave Liebman and pianist Richie Byrack. Liebman and Byrack pay tribute to their musical mentors, tour their discography, and suggest essential recordings to study. Trumpeter Arturo Sandoval, out with his new release, Rhythm and Soul, begins his four-night engagement tonight at Jazz Alley in Oakland, California. For more information, arturosandoval.com. Pianist Chuco Valdez celebrates his 81st birthday with a performance of a four-movement suite titled The Creation at the Rose Theater inside of Jazz at Lincoln Center Friday and Saturday, October 7th and 8th. For more information, 2022.jazz.org. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tonight, October 6th, the Thelonious Monk Birthday Celebration, Solo Monk, Aaron Goldberg, solo piano, at 8:30 p.m., and Friday, October 7th through Sunday, October 9th, the Thelonious Monk Birthday Celebration, Quartet Misterioso, for two sets. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club through Saturday, October 8th, bassist Ron Carter and his quartet. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. The Bad Plus performs at the Bluebird Theater in Denver, Colorado on Sunday, October 9th. For more information, thebadplus.com. Saxophonist, composer, and MacArthur Fellow Miguel Zignon continues his tour celebrating his latest release of original works, Musica de las Americas. He and his quartet are at Penn State University in Pennsylvania on Tuesday, October 11th, and at the 1905 in Portland, Oregon on October 19th and 20th. For more information, miguelzenon.com. This Friday and Saturday night, October 7th and 8th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, trumpeter Randy Brecker and his quintet for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. October Duos with pianist Armin Danilian and bassist Nick Edwards at Gateways Inn in Lenox, Massachusetts on Saturday, October 8th, 6 p.m. For more information, gatewaysin.com. And jazz this Sunday at the Falcon in Marlboro, New York on October 9th, drummer Mino Sinaloo's Hope on Hope. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. And now for upcoming new releases. Pianist Gonzalo Rubalcaba's Turning Point on Five Passion. Drummer Ernesto Cervini's Joy on TPR. Pianist Unye Jong's End of Time on 577. And pianist Ted Kujian's Hubbub on Summit. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guest is Jeff Levinson. He's a Grammy-recognized producer, executive, educator, and journalist specializing in jazz and pop. He's just produced Swiss trumpeter Franco Ambrosetti's realized project of playing with a string orchestra. This Enja Records release is titled Nora, with guitarist John Schofield, bassist Scott Colley, pianist Uri Kane, drummer Peter Erskine, and violinist and concertmaster Sarah Caswell, and featuring a 22-piece string orchestra conducted by pianist and arranger Alan Broadbent. I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
You are so very welcome. A great honor to be with you.
Thank you. My first question is, who made the call to get some of the busiest players on earth, guitarist John Schofield, bassist Scott Colley, pianist Uri Kane, drummer Peter Erskine, and violinist Sarah Caswell, in for a session with Swiss trumpeter Franco Ambrosetti and a 22-piece orchestra to record Nora?
That's quite a mouthful, and I could share with you that the effort to put it all together was big. The story, I guess it has its beginnings in two prior records I had done with Franco. Franco is a very interesting man. He's an emeritus figure from Switzerland, probably the dean of trumpet players. And he has been on the scene since the early 60s. And he has always been attracted to, top name artists, top quality musicians. They all gravitate to him and he to them. And so the group that you just asked about, featuring Schofield, Erskine, Colley, Uri Kane, Caswell, and also an important person we need to add here, is Alan Broadbent. They were all eager to work with Franco. The idea was that this is a fulfillment of a lifelong dream. He's always dreamed of doing a project with strings. I think it probably was born within him during his early years of listening to, Clifford Brown with strings and Bird with strings. And this is kind of a grand, sweeping, majestic type enterprise. And he wanted to place himself in the middle of this. It's also quite in line with his temperament and his nature. He's an extremely dignified, almost aristocratic person. He's lovely. And sort of surrounding him with the right people and the right sound and the right context for his flugelhorn became a mission of mine I mean, this was important to treat him and the music in the way that he imagined. So, a long-winded answer to your question, forgive me. But fundamentally, these are players who he felt very, very comfortable with. And once we established the idea of a string orchestra, then everything fell in place from that.
It wasn't hard for me to compare the work of pianist and arranger Alan Broadbent with that of arrangers Nelson Riddle and Billy May with vocalist Frank Sinatra. The strings on Nora, I liken to a dancer switching lead duties with Mr. Ambrosetti. The strings buoy his playing during the composition, so closely associated with saxophonist John Coltrane, After the Rain. And the tune All Blues, written by Miles Davis, in my opinion, was made for strings, with that indelible opening vamp played by saxophonists Coltrane and Cannonball Adderley, and Ambrosetti just gliding in with the with that melody. How did you become involved in his dream project?
Well, we have a very intimate relationship. I mean, I see my role with him as kind of a, I try to be a fulfiller. I try to be a midwife. I try to enable him to, create what I think exists inside him. And very often he's not completely in touch with that. We have to discover that. So, the idea of surrounding him with strings and coming up with this repertoire was very much a reflection, not just of who he is, but his mood at age 80. He's very dedicated to, giants who preceded him, an homage to Miles, an homage to Coltrane was not a stretch for him. But at the same time, he's very connected to a romantic version of beauty. I mean, there's a lot about this record that strikes me as a love letter. And there's a poignancy to it. And forgive the metaphor, but it really does, for me, sound like a Pacific Ocean sunset. It's got an amber burnt sienna quality to it that I love. So I think that a lot of what you are hearing or we are hearing here is his reflections on being part of a continuum, his notion that he exists within this long stretch of jazz musicians, and he's honoring his heroes. But at the same time, I think he's honoring his own place in the world. He's been at this for many, many years. And so I think he wanted to embrace a sense of remembrance and poignancy.
And with that, I want to add this quote from Mr. Ambrosetti from the press release. When you have so much support from strings, I don't think it's wise to add too much. So you try to be essential, playing only the most important things that come into your mind. It's what in German is called Spiken or saving notes, where you're trying to do only what you feel in that very moment. I believe he accomplished that. Do you agree, Jeff?
Well, I do agree. And by the way, I love that quote. And the quote, when I first read it, it reminded me of the trajectory of musicians' careers. When musicians are young, very often you hear them throwing every note they possess at you. There is a desire to validate themselves as studied, informed musicians, and you're going to get the kitchen sink thrown at you. And then, if you're really good at this and you dedicate yourself, you spend the rest of your life stripping away the non-essentials. So this quote for me is it's kind of like the voice of wisdom. You do this for 80 years, you realize that you have something to say. What is essential? What is your truth? What do you need to say? Understanding that you no longer have a lot to prove here, but rather you have the need to express. So what I hear and what I know of Franco is that he was extremely mindful of his place within this surround sound environment that had been created for him by Alan Broadbent and the musicians, but that he had a 360 view of the picture. He had his vision of the picture and how to place himself within it. Fulfilling that became a challenge, and that is, one of the things that I have to pay attention to as the producer. But I thought it was extremely wise and sensitive and experienced of him to know this and approach the project in that manner.
Had the opportunity to interview audio engineers Jim Anderson and Ulrike Schwartz last December about their work on vocalist and pianist Patricia Barber's 2021 Grammy-nominated release Click. As Jim put it, they work with what they have and bring it to life. Their ethic of improving digital systems and working with super high-resolution audio, DXD, is what makes their work, in my opinion, award-worthy and enjoyable to listen to. How was he involved with this, quote, new 3D technology used for Nora? Or maybe I should ask it as, was he brought in specifically to implement this new 3D technology?
Well, the one word answer to the question, how was he or to what degree, the word is completely. So both Jim and Ulrike are leaders in the field of immersive audio. And they have actually been fighting the good fight now for a number of years, incorporating this technology into some, oh, I guess, richer, more detailed audio landscape that technology can now provide. So they're very future-oriented. So the story here is rather simple. We were making a record. Jim is an expert engineer. We've done three records together. And just a very casual conversation as we were finishing up the recording, how this project was very well suited for immersive treatment. And not all projects are equally suited, but this seemed to have all the ingredients: big, lush arrangements, strings that cover, a wide sonic spectrum. So he was the one who sort of led this discussion on how we could approach this in a new enterprising way. And so I learned a lot from Jim. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I am connected to this world, but he's fully immersed in it. And we took his counsel very seriously. And I think the results were really, really good with his immersive counsel and leadership. He's good.
I loved my interview with those two. I
Yeah.
wasn't totally up on all of the terminology, but they were very thorough in how they explained everything, and I really enjoyed my conversation with them. It was very enlightening.
Hey, Cheryl, if I might add, I too am not up on the techno jargon, and I have to stop for a moment and absorb what's being said here.
Right.
So I'm not totally different from you in that regard.
The Levinson Creative Group is the umbrella title for a number of your projects and activities. Would you please tell us about it?
Yeah. The Levinson Creative Group is really a loose consortium of people who do things with me. And I'm motivated by interesting, challenging projects. I'm really, you know, I've been in this business since 1977. And so I do have certain freedoms at the moment to pick and choose the kinds of projects I feel like delving into. The Levinson Creative Group is a very loose group of people who all come together. You know, we make records, we make videos, we do projects. And from project to project, depending on what the needs are, I'll know who to bring in to work with me. So honestly, what you're looking at is just a group of individuals who possess, I think, a passion, and I like to think endless curiosity, and we do things. And Franco's project is one of many projects that I have worked on. At the moment, it is perhaps the grandest. I mean, it's big. And that is essentially what the group does. I'm very involved in Europe also. I bring together jazz organizations and entities with American organizations in the service of partnering on behalf of jazz and jazz musicians.
Do you all share recipes and like bake cookies together and casseroles and
We are so kumbaya. It's unbelievable, Cheryl. Thank you for asking that.
All right. So, can we talk about two of your selected writings on your webpage? The one about guitarist Walter Becker and the group he co-founded, Steely Dan. They have always been one of my favorite groups, and I feel like I found my beat with and through Steely Dan. Before I became involved in music education and before I became involved in jazz radio programming. Now, if you write about them, you have a great and deep appreciation for them. Would you talk about that appreciation?
Before I answer your question, I just need to tell you that you are touching me deeply. And this is not a small point. And I'll try to make it very short in Cliff's Notes version. But I owe much of everything to Donald and Walter. I was a rock and roll kid. I had run a radio station in Westchester with Howard Stern in the 70s. And I was given a record that was not suited for the station's playlist because it was too jazz. The record was jazz. It could not be played on the station. The record was Asia. I knew very little about jazz. Again, a rock and roll kid. And my first record was the Everly Brothers. That'll give you an idea of how I entered into the music world. But through Asia, which totally captured my imagination, I heard a saxophonist. It turns out this is Wayne Shorter, and I'm really interested in that sound. And then I do some research and I find out that Wayne Shorter played with a guy named Miles Davis. And then I find out Wayne played with a guy named Zawinul, but then Zawinul played with a guy named Cannonball Adderley. And then Cannonball was inspired by the great saxophonists of another era. And before I knew it, Cheryl, I was doing time travel back and forth across the decades learning about jazz. So What started out as a simple exercise of listening to a discarded record, Asia, that was just being tossed. It was a giant portal that I climbed through. And within a very short time, I had people convinced that I knew something about jazz. And I thank Steely Dan for that entirely.
In my mind, I've always said if I could replace the soundtrack for Blade Runner with anything, it would be that album, Asia. Every time I watch it, I don't know why, but I think of Asia.
Great thought. You know, I'm going to place it as one of the most perfect rock or whatever. I don't know what we're going to call it at the moment, but one of the most perfect albums. This is the execution of just a perfect vision. And in every respect, you know, songwriting, sound, the vocal arrangements, everything is just perfect. Just talk about an earworm kind of a sonic environment. Those guys created something. I mean, just the percussion alone has stayed with me for decades. So I'm very attached to that as a creative achievement. And those guys in particular have always struck me as, you know, subversive geniuses or genius subversives or whatever the case might be. And also, just the one additional piece, just magnificent storytelling. You know, the narratives in those stories and those songs, well, they're just, you know, it's our version of high literature. So I have great respect clear across the board for all that they have done.
My interview with Jeff Levinson, with music by Franco Ambrosetti and the group Steely Dan. For more information, jefflevinson.com.
Here at the
And now for some music.
Thank you.
from Blue Keys, California-based guitarist Calvin Keys' Wide Hive Records release from August. That was the tune Ajafika. And from recordings made by bassist Joe Policastro's trio from its inception until now, we heard a selection from Sounds Unheard, Odds and Ends, 2012 to 2022 on Giru Jazz Records, the title song from the 1964 James Bond film Goldfinger. Dave Miller on guitar, Mikael Avery on drums, and Joe Policastro on bass. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. For more information about the show, jazzfluxus.com. My interview is with saxophonist and bass clarinetist, composer, label owner of Earshift Music, and festival producer Jeremy Rose. He and the Earshift Orchestra, featuring drummers Simon Barker and Chloe Kim, recently won the APRA AMCOS Art Music Award for Jazz Improvised Music Performance of the Year for their collaborative work Disruption, The Voice of Drums. His new release is titled Face to Face on Earshift Music. Our interview began at 6 a.m. my time from upstate New York and 9 p.m. Jeremy's time from Sydney, Australia. So I want to thank you this. Now it's morning for me. It's evening for you. Thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for having us.
So first off, congrats on your recent APRA AMCOS Art Music Award with the Earshift Orchestra and drummers Simon Barker and Chloe Kim.
Thanks so much. Yeah, it was a real thrill to take out the award for Jazz Improvised Music Performance of the Year. Yeah, it's really great. Yeah.
Your first release with one of your groups, The Vampires, came out in 2008. Since then, you've become involved in several other groups. You own and operate a record label, Earshift Music, based in Sydney, Australia. You've curated and hosted the Earshift Music Festival. Do you feel that this award moves you forward? Meaning, do you expect it to be a springboard for your next project?
Yeah, I mean, it's really great to have industry recognition for the work that we do. You know, I guess I'm just driven by a personal endeavor of trying to get the music out there and get it heard by as many people as possible. And I guess, you know, hopefully this enables me to tap into further opportunities to do that. So, you know, things have really come a long way with the label. You know, we're coming up to our 70th release this year, although we started in 2009. And it's really great just, you know, especially after the few years that we've had to be able to continue doing what we do and really championing creative jazz music here.
It sounds like the label is artist driven.
I'd say so. Having myself an artist as the director, I'm able to kind of curate it and kind of steer it, the aesthetic of the label in a particular direction. And I've always been kind of driven by or interested in jazz music and related genres, and you know how jazz kind of intersects with other genres, cultures, and traditions. And I guess many of my projects and my releases reflect that.
Over the years, you've taken the time and expense to travel, to learn and develop and make career connections. You've traveled to the United States, Canada, Greece, and countries in South America. In 2017, you were in my neck of the woods, Get New York, at Art Oh My.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh. So you're up near the Hudson?
Yes.
Up near Hudson, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a fantastic experience. So I'm not sure if your listeners are aware, but Art Oh My, they run these artist residencies, and I was lucky enough to take part in that. And it's just so amazing coming together with musicians and artists from all around the world, from really diverse backgrounds. And it was a really wonderful experience.
Cool. Tell us about your time at Art Oh My, and if what you experienced and absorbed informed your business practices and or improved your musicianship.
Interesting. Interesting question. Yeah, I guess I think it really taught me to have a vision and really think big with my projects. And I guess that's reflected in particularly my projects that I write for my Earshift Orchestra. And, you know, they often have a lifespan of about 5 years. So, you know, hanging with the artists at the residency and seeing what sort of projects they were doing, it left me feeling, or at least just questioning what's really important to me and what sort of legacy I want to leave behind. And I think these large scale projects, the ones that sort of challenge socio-political and, have a real story and interesting narrative about them, are the ones that leave an impression and that I want to make a mark with. Yeah.
Yeah. Your most recent release, Face to Face, was mentioned in Bandcamp's Best of Jazz Roundup review for August. On that release, you're with pianist Steve Barry, bassist Noel Mason, and drummer Alex Herlihan. Written during a lockdown in 2020, you say that this release is, quote, not a product of being locked down, but a reflection on the important things in life. Now, you and I have probably witnessed people being less than reflective during lockdowns worldwide. In your opinion, what's the risk in not realizing what's important?
Well, I think people have a tendency to absorb some of the information on the internet that perhaps isn't so great for themselves. You know, misinformation has been spreading like wildfire, and I guess that's one risk. And people, you know, can undertake or explore more extreme views. So that's one aspect. But also, you know, it's really it's important to cherish the relations we have in real life, and the connections and that we have with people face to face. You know, I guess that you can't really, even though we live in such a digitized world, we can't really replace those real life connections. So.
now let's get to the music. Let's talk about some of the things coming up. I heard there's something coming up on October 14th. What's October 14th?
Yeah, well, that's the release of Disruption, The Voice of Drums, which is a brand new album featuring myself with the Earshift Orchestra and two extraordinary drummers, Chloe Kim and Simon Barker, and a six-piece electroacoustic ensemble, the Earshift Orchestra. And that's really a very interesting project. I took some of their solo drum music and created compositions that kind of complemented and enhanced what they were doing. And then they recomposed their parts on top. So it's kind of this interesting reverse engineer process. Anyway, the music and the drumming on it is kind of unlike anything you might have heard. So it's it's kind of a compelling album that I'm really proud of. So that's coming out 14th of October worldwide through Earshift Music.
As I like to say, it's not your grandfather's jazz.
I'd say that's a good way to put it.
So you've probably been asked these two questions often. How do you do it? And why do you do it? With all of the musical and personal achievements and accolades that you've received, my question is, at this point, how do you maintain it?
You know, I guess I'm just driven by the desire to connect really interesting music with fans around and build fans around the world. You know, for me, having the label is a really exciting opportunity to build that bridge between artists and fans. And, you know, it's continuing to build. And that's, you know, I guess I'm driven by that, the excitement of building those connections. And then artistically, you know, I guess I'm always interested in the nature of musical activity that's kind of just beyond my own tastes and aesthetics. So I guess I'm, you know, as I said, I'm really interested in exploring the intersections of music and musical styles and cultures and traditions. Yeah, I guess it's a real privilege to be able to do that for a career and for a living. So I guess I'm just blessed in that way, and I want to make the most of every opportunity that comes my way.
So as we come to the close of this interview, I'd like to give you the last word. Is there something you'd like us to know?
I don't know if I can do a plug for the for the music, but you know, make sure you go online. Of course, we're on all the streaming platforms, but make sure you connect with us on Bandcamp. You can follow myself and all the artists on there on the Earshift Bandcamp page and on our website, earshift.com, and my own website, jeremyrose.com.au. You know, hit us up on the socials as well, and you can sign up to our mailing list, and hopefully we can stay in touch.
My interview with Jeremy Rose, with music by Jeremy Rose and the Earshift Orchestra, The Vampires, and Jeremy Rose. For more information, jeremyrose.com.au. Oh, wait a minute. I do have one question. Who came up with the name for your group, The Vampires? There's got to be a story here.
You know, I mean, the group's been around for quite some years now, and it we came up with that actually before the Vampire Twilight series came out. So, you know, it wasn't such a big thing back then. And, you know, that followed with True Blood, and I guess it just went on and on, right? The music in that band's built around vamps, which is like a repeating ostinato musical term. So, and we wanted to get away from calling it, you know, so-and-so's quartet. So it was just a kind of... I guess it was just a fun name that kind of stuck. And, you know, it's hard to change band names after a while, but we don't really think about it too much anymore. It's only when you hear it for the first time.
Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for and airing on WGXC 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WGXC. WGXC.org. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you.